This Week in HPC by Intersect 360 Research.
GTC is back and bigger than ever.
And Blackwell wows the crowd.
It's This Week in HPC. Hi, everybody, and thanks for listening to an all-new episode of This Week in HPC with Intersect 360 Research, distributed in partnership with HPC Wire. I'm Addison Snell from Intersect 360 Research. And with the podcast coming back, I am now joined by Kevin Jackson, who has joined Tabor Communications as the new managing editor of Enterprise AI. Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk AI with you.
And you've got some background in this space, is this right?
Absolutely, yes. I used to be editor-in-chief of ScienceNode, which was a publication out of Indiana University that focused on academic supercomputing news. And now I'm focusing a little bit more on AI.
Well, this week was a good week to be focusing on AI because GTC was back in person for the first time in a couple of years. And man, it went big.
Yes, it did. Yeah, about 10,000 attendees crammed into the home of the San Jose Sharks to watch Jensen Huang's two-hour keynote. This one was also a little different because, as many people know, NVIDIA now has a market cap of more than $2 trillion.
Wowie.
Yes, yeah, it's making it the third most valuable publicly traded company in the world behind Microsoft and Apple. Pretty crazy.
Well, and this is all due to AI. I mean, NVIDIA has really moved the market on this and has been doing everything right for a couple of years now. They're really on a tear. So it does not surprise me that they would pack the arena like that. And the big news, of course, coming out of GTC was a new GPU codenamed Blackwell.
Yeah, absolutely. The Blackwell GPU was the big unveiling for the keynote. It's an incredible innovation over previous tech. It's named after David Blackwell, who's a highly celebrated mathematician. He was the seventh African-American to earn a PhD in mathematics in the U.S. He made huge contributions to game theory, statistics, specifically the Rao-Blackwell theorem. And he was deeply involved in mentoring over 50 students during his career as an educator.
This I absolutely love. NVIDIA carrying on its tradition of naming its chips after prominent people in our industry and with a focus on diversity. Now, neither Tabor Communications nor Intersect 360 Research is a $2 trillion company, but it is something we believe in as well. You've been covering footage from Dan Olds, our chief research officer, and his Winter Classic Invitational Student Cluster Competition to benefit HBCUs and Hispanic-serving institutions in our space, and we thank HBC Wire for our media partnership for that student cluster competition. But getting back to Blackwell, tell us about this chip.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. You know, the Blackwell GPU can train 1 trillion parameter models. It delivers a 5x increase in token generation or inference compared to the Hopper chip that it's replacing. It has 208 billion transistors, which is 2.5 times more transistors than the predecessor H100 GPU. It provides 20 petaflops of AI performance on a single GPU, and it delivers 4 times the training performance of Hopper, 30 times the inference performance overall, and 25 times better energy efficiency. Now, energy efficiency is obviously an enormous component to AI work, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When we go out and talk about these new supercomputers, whether they're in HPC or AI, power efficiency is one of the key topics of performance. It's always been out there, but when we talk to end users in our surveys, it shows up as a major limiting factor in people's supercomputing deployments, whether for HPC or AI. So looking at the power efficiency of Blackwell is tremendously important. Now, there's always a question about how you measure that in terms of performance or price performance. The numbers coming out on Blackwell are stunning. If I have any criticism at all, and it's only a nit, it's that when you talk about petaflops or exaflops of AI performance, it's that I used to know how much a flop was, and now I have to double click on that to get down and see, all right, when we talk in Jensen flops, how much is a flop? That's probably not 64-bit double precision flops. It's even probably not 32-bit. Is it 8? Is it a B float? Is it a mixed precision? I'm not sure exactly what that is when they talk about flops, but I'm sure it's in there in the fine print somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And, you know, you were talking about energy efficiency being so important to people. Another one is, especially with AI, is going to be uptime, right? And the Blackwell GPUs include a dedicated RAS engine. That's reliability, availability, and serviceability. That does a 100% reliable in-system test to detect a weak node or weak chip. AI work runs for extended periods of time, as we know, and demands a lot of uptime, and we clearly need chips to prioritize that.
Yeah, and this is something that really carries over from the HPC side. We're used to thinking now of AI as being the big market that's driving innovation, but HPC has been dealing with RAS in this context for single job performance for a while, whether through technologies like checkpoint restart or node isolation. How do you contain a fault for a large run? So to see that integrated into an engine for an AI chip, that's a really important innovation for NVIDIA and Blackwell. Well done there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that really, you know, got me, one of the things that really stunned me was that the Blackwell GPU is manufactured using TSMC's 4-nanometer process with 2 reticle limit GPU dies connected by a 10 terabyte per second chip-to-chip link. Huang stated that each side doesn't know what side it's on, so there are no locality issues.
Yeah, so TSMC, first of all, the fact that we get the fab is now a world recognized company for the leadership in process. Everyone else is chasing that right now. 4 nanometers is a very big deal in terms of process innovation, and it's generations ahead of where the competition is right now. The data locality is something I'm going to have to look more into. I hadn't seen that piece of news yet, and I need to understand better how that works, because that doesn't conform to my previous ideas about data locality in terms of where is the data relative to the processing element that's communicating with that data. Saying each chip doesn't know which side it's on, to me, doesn't solve data locality, but maybe they mean something beyond my understanding. I look forward to digging into this news a little bit more with that.
Sure, of course, of course. And, you know, of course, as we're talking about the GPU size crunch we're going through, one of the solutions is going to be clustering, right? GPT-4 has about 1.8 trillion parameters, which required several trillion tokens to go train. Training on a single GPU would take 1,000 years, so NVIDIA figured out a way to lash thousands of GPUs together over fast NVLink networks to make the cluster function as one.
To me, when we break down all the news coming out of this, I think this NVLink news is probably the most important individual piece of news in terms of what it means for the industry, because NVLink, I'm used to thinking of that as just being originally a socket technology for the GPUs and the memory. Then it got to where it was a node, a chassis. Now they're extending NVLink and the GPU to GPU communication over a full rack. And you said they've got big numbers for what the full rack performance is, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The NVLink switch is the first rack-level switch chip that can support up to 576 GPUs in a non-blocking compute fabric. It also interconnects every GPU pair at 1,800 gigabytes per second. The 72 GPUs in the GB200 NVL72, which connects 36 Grace CPUs and 72 Blackwell GPUs in a rack-scale design, can be used as a single high-performance accelerator with up to 1.4 exaflops of AI compute power.
Exa Jensen flops. We got to figure out how much is a flop there. That's probably some sort of mixed precision or 8-bit. But regardless, this is exactly what I mean in terms of the importance of this networking announcement, because with NVLink and this extension, really, it puts NVIDIA in the lead in networking on 2 fronts, because they can do the GPU connectivity with NVLink, and then they have the system-level connectivity with InfiniBand through its acquisition of Mellanox a couple of years ago. And the rest of the industry is also playing catch-up there. Now, we really want to watch the Ultra Ethernet Consortium and how that evolves with Intel and other networking players, AMD. But if NVIDIA is now generations ahead on the process technology and the computation with AI, they're also now generations ahead in networking in two respects, having kind of the top two options for putting these things together. I guess there's other, you know, things like Slingshot out there, or Tofu, or BXI for high-end system interconnect. But, you know, those are particular to specific vendors and supercomputing deployments. They're not really these generalized interconnects. Now, you know, NVIDIA is just for NVIDIA. So, but to me, I really like that NVLink announcement. I think that's really significant in the industry, and it really helps push all of NVIDIA's news around generative AI.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes that $2 trillion market cap make sense, huh?
Well, $2 trillion is a lot to get my head around. It is still early games, and we'll get to talking about market size also. But generative AI, that is those are the words coming out of everybody's mouth, and including and most especially Jensen's.
Huang also talked about Earth 2, which was an interesting application. Earth 2 is a full-stack open platform that accelerates climate and weather predictions with AI-augmented high-resolution simulation. Pretty interesting development.
I heard that in the news talking about Earth 2. Now, they did a previous digital twin of the whole Earth. This is the second generation. I think it's terrific. It reminds me of the Earth simulator in Japan when that came out a couple of decades ago and we started doing planet scale climate modeling. As with everything, I find some of the claims around this to be somewhat hyperbolic, to say it's a complete digital twin of everything in the entire world. I mean, philosophically, I don't know that something can be a digital twin that includes a model of itself and predicts how things go forward, and ultimately to say you're going to totally displace all of weather prediction and climate prediction with generative AI models, I think that's elongated to me. You don't have 1,000 years of data, including things like, you know, deep ocean temperatures. That data just doesn't exist, and we've been trying to do predictive-based modeling of the climate ever since the Farmer's Almanac and before. There's a limit to what you can do with prediction. At some point, you need to do scientific computing and do the math. But this still changes the game and is something that that will influence all of weather prediction and climate modeling going forward. It is a tremendous achievement.
Absolutely. I plan to keep my eye on this. I expect great things from Earth, too.
I saw one of the, in particular, supercomputing announcements that did get announced during the show was Novo Nordisk is a Danish organization that announced a Grace Hopper supercomputer that it claimed was going to be one of the largest AI computers in the world. It's certainly one of the largest that's dedicated to scientific research. It's a Grace Hopper-based system that's integrated by Evident. I thought that was a good announcement that's out there. But speaking of Evident, a little bit of rocky news coming there. Evident, which of course is the big data and security division, which housed all of HPC coming out of Atos, that had been spun out, was kind of waiting on a planned acquisition by Airbus that had been publicly out in the news. We were expecting news to come in any time now about the completion of that. And instead, what we got this week was a terse announcement from Airbus that it was no longer interested in the acquisition. So that will have some implications in the European supercomputing market in terms of the future role of Evident. There's a lot on the hook there in terms of the French state and what it means for some of the planned exascale systems, where Evident is going to be the prime contractor. I believe they will find a solution, but this was a sort of topic of side conversation while Steve Conway and I visited the Euro HPC Summit, which was going on this week in Antwerp, Belgium, while Dan Olds was covering GTC for us. We were picking up the latest on European supercomputing news. Obviously, there was a big emphasis on AI. There was a lot of emphasis on national sovereignty. There's a lot of emphasis on the European processor initiatives, including what was the latest on Cypril and the Rhea processor and the planned accelerators there. So that was all interesting news. There was a big talk about quantum. I find that the European initiatives on quantum are a little more community-driven and more tangible than some of what we hear in the United States, where it's a lot more siloed and focused on technology. But that brings us back to GTC as well, because interestingly, NVIDIA wasn't silent on quantum either. There was a little bit of quantum news coming out of GTC.
Yes, there was. Yeah. They're not really known as a quantum computing powerhouse, but they've been aggressively beefing up their quantum portfolio. And the biggest news out of GTC was the NVIDIA Quantum Cloud. It's a set of microservices for building and testing in the cloud new quantum algorithms and applications like simulators and tools for hybrid quantum classical computing.
Yeah, this is, again, interesting for NVIDIA to be able to get into that, because a big step for quantum computing is going to be quantum simulation. And I think cloud is a natural delivery platform for that. So to have NVIDIA technologies and its clouds able to get into quantum simulation, I think, is the right next step for NVIDIA. It's just good news on top of good news coming out of Jensen, NVIDIA, and GTC.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, just more general things coming out from Jensen. You know, he said, we need even larger models. We're going to train them with multi-modality data, not just text on the internet, but we're going to train them on text and images and graphs and charts, and just as we learned by watching TV. It's a little tongue-in-cheek humor there, but, you know, it's interesting how the multi-modality data discussion is coming about as these AI models evolve.
Yeah, and look, it's a new market, and I think Jensen was alluding to that as well in a lot of his talks. This is a new way of doing things. Now, we're in scientific computing on the HPC side, and there's a lot where it's going to exist side by side, where, you know, even human scientists who are the smartest in their field have to do math sometimes, and AI is going to have to do computation sometimes in order to advance the state of the art. But it does change the way the world works.
Absolutely. And, you know, that kind of moves into something that Jensen said multiple times. The future is generative. The future is generative. You know, instead of fetching pre-made content, it will be generated on demand by an AI supercomputer, which will cause compute demand to skyrocket. You know, something else Wang mentioned was that every company with data now has the opportunity to monetize that data through Gen AI. So in addition to selling hardware, NVIDIA is selling software designed to help them train and deploy models, including the NVIDIA AI Enterprise and the new NVIDIA Inference Microservices, NIM.
It is a new world. It is still early times as well. And NVIDIA is still, I think, primarily focused on its hyperscale markets, because even to the extent that we talk about the enterprise AI market that's outside of hyperscale, that is predominantly delivered by cloud companies, which then puts the infrastructure back into the hands of a relatively few hyperscale companies. Now, that's new as well, because NVIDIA has been investing in new generations of AI companies, whether CoreWeave or Lambda or somebody else, where we see these massive GPU clouds as alternatives to the leaders, AWS, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud. This is all going to be going into our market forecasting going forward.
Definitely. And, you know, ultimately, what seems to excite Jensen is the newness of it all. You know, the shift from retrieval-based computing to generative-based computing is a big one. It just requires new hardware, new software, new business models. And I got a couple of quotes here that I want to get your thoughts on, Addison.
Yeah, give them to me.
So first one is, he referred to AI as a new industrial revolution. Your thoughts?
Agree. Well, a new industrial revolution is certainly a new technological revolution. I put it in the same category for myself as the dawn of the World Wide Web back in the late 90s, when everything was a web boom. It had the similar amount of hype, if you remember, information superhighway, and how it was going to change the entire world of how we were going to do business. And it did, in ways that went beyond what we would have predicted at the time. We weren't talking about apps and smartphones then, but that was all just part of what eventually was the web revolution and where it took us. It doesn't completely displace every other way of doing business, but the web certainly changed the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. And here's another one I think you're going to have some thoughts on. He said, why is it a new industry? Because the software never existed before. We are now producing software, using computers to run software, producing software that has never existed before. It's a brand new category. It took share from nothing.
I mean, that's a perspective. I think there's a, when you say it's a new category, that's true. Just as the web sprung full form from the head of Zeus, you could say it stole share from nothing. Well, you know, that's true and not true. It is a new category, but there's only so much money in the world and it gets spent on something. So you create a new category and it comes from somewhere. Now, to the extent that going back to NVIDIA is primarily focused on the hyperscale companies, they weren't doing this before and now they are. It does create a new category of high performance markets, or a new, whether you think of it as a new category or a subcategory of HPC for high performance technologies. We're going to be putting them together in our market forecast this year, including hyperscale as a special segment of what will be the expanded HPC AI market. We've been trying to emphasize the dominant role of hyperscale relative to all of the rest of computing. In fact, Steve Conway, who was with me at Euro HPC, also earlier this month attended the Rice Energy Conference, which I've attended in the past. And the quote coming out of that was that we in the HPC market have to get used to the idea that we are the tail getting wagged by a very large dog, which is AI and hyperscale right now. And I do think that's accurate. It's clear that AI is what's driving technological innovation right now. And NVIDIA is absolutely at the forefront and generations ahead of their competition at the moment.
Absolutely. And it was really great to see all of the new advancements and new innovations at GTC. It was a heck of a conference.
Kevin, thanks for covering it. I'm going to get a download from Dan as well and be catching up on content. But Kevin, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to more conversations with you in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks. This is a lot of fun.
You've been listening to This Week in HPC, brought to you by Intersect 360 Research, actionable market intelligence for high-performance computing. For more information, visit intersect360.com.